This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. This is David Wilk, your host, and today I'm talking with David Rothman, who runs a website called Telluride.org. He's been a journalist for a number of years and involved in the internet for a really long time. Welcome, David, to Publishing Talks.
It's great to be there virtually, David.
Well, it's nice to have you here virtually, and we're using, of course, web-based technology that didn't exist probably 10 years ago, and it, like a lot of the things that we imagined over the many years that you and I have both been involved in internet activities, things have really evolved. Let's talk a little bit about your background. Telluride is the thing that perhaps most people know about today that you do. You've been a journalist in the past. Maybe you could just talk a little briefly about how you came to be involved in working on the internet.
Well, in my first incarnation, yes, I was a reporter for a paper in Northern Ohio. Among other things, I covered the Kent State Massacre. Also, there's something significant in terms of Telluride. Working the poverty beat, I didn't exactly see shelf after shelf of books in the homes of the welfare mothers I wrote about. I later returned to D.C., did investigative work under grants from the Fund for Investigative Journalism and other writing. Among other things, I reported on an apparently illegal and secret investment by Abraham Ribicoff, a senator in the Key Building in Arlington, Virginia, which housed offices of the CIA. Around the early 1980s, by then I was hearing a lot about technology and computers, and I figured one of these gizmos perhaps could help speed up my writing, and maybe the way to pay for it is to write a book. And that was the origin of my first book, The Silicon Jungle. Around the early 90s, I had run across a column by William F. Buckley, who, by the way, in many ways is my, maybe most ways, is my political opposite, where he bemoaned the fact that students were relying on CD-ROMs rather than books for certain research tasks. And I figured, well, actually, maybe he should be thinking in the other direction. Instead of having the students adjust to the existing situation, maybe we should go ahead and put stuff online electronically, not with CD-ROMs, but through a computer network. And that was the origin of the Telluride idea. The site itself has been online since the 1990s. I actually got on the internet first in 1993. We're now reaching around 90,000 unique visitors a month. And the site originally was established to propagate the Telluride idea, but it's become a lot more than that. It's a way to see electronic books in action firsthand, at least indirectly, through the many posts that I make and that my visitors make. And through all this time, I've still held true to the basic Telluride vision, which consists of getting the library out there, a well-stocked national digital library system, encouraging the creation of the right and use of the right hardware, and C, I would like to see some form of cost justification so that the same tablets or other hardware good for reading books would also be good for, electronic forums, e-commerce, and that other good stuff. Needless to say, since I first conceived the Telluride idea, a lot of the stuff is available anyway, but there's still advantages in terms of standards. One reason for my interest in the ebook standards movement, and so on and so on. So in a nutshell, that's the story about me and Telluride.
Well, no, it's very interesting that your vision of Telluride, in a sense, has come, you know, it's not totally come to pass, but in a lot of ways, the things that you were interested in thinking of Telluride have naturally evolved as the hardware has improved and as, you know, connectivity has increased. We have more broadband, more widely available. Although there still is not what you've described as a well-stocked national digital library, increasingly libraries themselves are acting as nodes of a digital network where there is increasingly information available, and broadly so. But what do you see kind of as the future? Like, here we are, we're talking at the very beginning of a new decade, 2010. And we've seen a lot of change over the last 10 years. Trying to think ahead over the next 10, and this is not assuming that we can know all of the things that are going to happen. You know, obviously that's one of the issues of prediction, is that we are bound to a great extent by what we can, what we've seen in the past kind of influences how we look forward to the future. But what do you see happening, let's say, over the next 10 years in terms of connectivity, standards? What are the impediments to the increase in distribution of information and the ability of people to share knowledge?
One word, greed. I'm very concerned about, shall we say, coin-operated libraries, about hopefully we're long past the stage where people were worried about getting charged for every little bite. You know, we're now thinking in much bigger terms. Now we're worried about they're getting charged for every bleeping gigabyte or multiple gigabytes and all that. But I think the real issue will be business models. Do we want books to be available for free and at low cost, or are we going to see books become like newspapers as currently envisioned by, say, the Rupert Murdochs, where you're going to have to constantly pay up in nasty ways? I certainly believe in a vigorous private sector and a vigorous publishing industry, and I am very concerned about freedom of expression issues that arise whenever you're talking about the government being involved in anything. But at the same time, I do think that we should work to get our libraries on, not just online, but online in a systematic way. And right now, it's rather privatized in the sense that you have certain services, such as OverDrive, providing the access to books, and indeed maybe there's a major role for them. I can envision them as contractors, and I certainly don't want a government-related library to be the source of everything. Far from it, for freedom of expression purposes. But I do think there are more efficient ways in the present patchwork, and I would also remind you that a lot of material just isn't online right now for commercial reasons. For example, the works of Saul Bellow. There are a lot of literary works that really ought to be online that aren't. And at the same time, mind you, I'm not talking about giving away the shop for free. You know, I certainly believe in fair compensation for writers and for publishers. And in fact, that's part of the problem with the present system. Amazon's payment rates are just perfectly outrageous. Not only that, the present system is really bad in terms of the effect on authors. I myself have a book out from a small press called Twilight Times Books, The Solomon Scandals. If you type the word Solomon Scandals into the main searcher at Amazon. In other words, I believe it's the all store searcher as well as the book searcher. You will not get the correct page, and instead, at least if it's the same as it was when I last tried it, you will get a page to a non-existent DRM version, and it will come with a message saying that this book is not available in the United States. Simply put, Amazon, whether the issue is payments or whether the issue is the details, like the kind that have made life hell for me as a writer, Amazon-type situations are not the best news. So what I'm proposing in Telluride is a better scenario than the one that I know you asked about scenarios, and right now I think we're headed toward a horrible one with these giants, you know, Google and Amazon being involved, and I think it's like health insurance. I think that the government should also be involved. I don't want Amazon put out of business, just the reverse. I want it to thrive. I want Google, in which, by the way, I happen to be a very, very, very small long-term investor. I want these outfits to thrive too, but I don't want the private approach to be the only business model, and I fear that if it does become that, especially if the Google book settlement prevails, this will not be an ideal scenario. So I think there's a big distinction between what is going to happen as it would appear now and what could happen, the good things that could happen.
Well, let me ask you a couple of specific questions. So you alluded just now to a pricing issue with Amazon. I think that what you're talking about is their pricing model for ebooks.
Well, in this case, I'm talking about the royalty split. I don't recall the exact percentage. I think they're asking. You know, they're taking somewhere around 2/3 of the revenue from publishers and writers. Whatever it is, it's really outrageously high. You know,
When you sell an ebook to Amazon or any other buyer for that matter, you know, pricing, publishers are obligated to offer the same prices to the same classes of buyers. So Amazon, I think, for ebooks purchased through most of the normal distribution channels, they're getting 50% off the retail price. I think the higher discount may apply to self-published things on if you use the digital publishing platform that Amazon provides, then I think they may take a higher percentage. But it still is high, and I think it's an issue that, bears a lot of discussion in terms of...
Whatever it is, it's high compared to the value that they're offering, and I think considering all the problems I've had, even 50%, and I'm very much aware that, you know, that in regular publishing, you know, 50% in terms of what a distributor would expect, you know, that's not that unusual. But the problem with Amazon is that they're providing this stuff virtually, and the cost should be a lot lower.
Yeah, I think that's an argument that publishers and authors need to take up with Amazon. And of course, you had mentioned a concern about private ownership of what ultimately, if private interests control all of the access to information, as you know, as is the case in certain areas, you know, where you have a monopoly, a virtual monopoly of access, it's very difficult for the vendors, the smaller publishers or even large publishers to argue for a different pricing model when the entity that they're talking to has complete control of the marketplace, or I guess that's an exaggeration here. The entities that they're arguing with have large shares of the market. It's very difficult for the for the sellers to change the rate, and they can't. The way our system works is sellers can't band together to force the buyers into a particular business model. So it is a really interesting, difficult problem. If the 50% discount on electronic books stands, then that alters the entire pricing structure for the publishers. And of course, then relates back to how much authors get. And you mentioned earlier, the problem of, let's say, authors like Saul Bellow's estate not being willing to authorize their books to be available digitally. And of course, that gets into a big discussion about how authors should be compensated, another question that might be brought forward is how long should copyright protection last? This is an interesting discussion, I think, that if we're talking about free flow of information in a democratic society, you have owners of copyrighted material today have virtually a century of control over it, or longer. Do you think that's a problem in terms of availability and the ability of people to gain access to information and ideas and works of literature? Should copyright be restored to a shorter period of time as it was for so many years prior to 1978?
Well, I think you're absolutely right about the issues involved. Even now, even though The Great Gatsby was published around 1925, it's still under copyright. Do we really think that the Copyright Term Extension Act enabled Scott Fitzgerald to be more productive in his grave? It really has gotten out of control, and I think one of the ways to reduce library costs would be to restore sanity as far as copyright terms. I'm not one of these folks who believes in 14-year terms renewable to 28 years, but I think that the Copyright Term Extension Act went too far in the other direction, and we need to do something about it. And there's an issue you haven't brought up, and that's the concept of what is truly ownership of books? And this is another big issue if private interests are allowed to run out of control, and that is, don't you want to be able to own your books for real? I certainly believe in libraries, but I also believe in the right of individuals to own books that can't be taken away from them. And we know, of course, of the recent example of Amazon taking away of all books, at least temporarily, 1984 and Animal Farm, works by George Orwell. It just shows how brazen some of these private interests can be. And again, with libraries, you don't, there too, you don't own books for real, but at least it's one way of balancing power. And there are also possibilities such as a concept I've been toying with in recent years, the idea of permanent checkout, whereby a small number of books would be available to be kept on one's computer, even though they've been obtained from the library, and payments to writers would reflect this accordingly. So there are all kinds of business models possible, even within a library context.
Well, actually, I think it that sort of ties into an idea I've been thinking about lately, and that is to rethink the way that owners of or creators of intellectual property are compensated, and to think a sort of global international form of a structure sort of like ASCAP and BMI follow today, which is that you could, given the fact that electronic books are fairly trackable, you could envision essentially a compensation model for all creators, giving them a small fee for every time a book is read or used. And the way that this could be paid for on the input side is through some form of a tax based on your bandwidth use, so that if you use more IP, then you're going to pay a little bit more because you should. You should pay for consumption. You're consuming information. You should pay for it. And the creators should be compensated for their use. And we actually could do that today. The structure of it is fairly hard to get your head around because it's so big. But on the other hand, we can pretty much track everything on the web today, and in fact, everything is tracked on some level. So it's possible to imagine a completely different method of compensating creators that would be based on, for instance, Telluride getting 90,000 uniques a month. You're making available information to people, and on some level, the people who do the creating could be compensated based simply on the number of page views.
Well, that's an interesting possibility, but there are other possibilities too, such as I've been talking about the possibility of some kind of an ISP tax, but basically we're in the same ballpark here. So, yes, I'm open to these ideas as long as these taxes would be within reason. And if you're thinking in global terms, where the market is so much larger than it is for any one country, even the United States in a lot of cases, not all cases, of course, a lot of works will have their primary appeal within a certain geographical area. But if you do think in global terms, certainly that opens up all kinds of possibilities. One problem, of course, thinking in global terms, is that different cultures have different attitudes toward content. And even many years after it was written, you wonder how well might a novel like Hayden Place, or say even Ulysses, or other works, popular or great, how would they play in ultra-conservative countries? So there are all kinds of challenges when you do think internationally, but yes, that is one way to go in terms of getting appropriate compensation to creators, and at the same time keeping the cost at the user level manageable. So I like the basic way you're thinking.
Well, there's so many different things that we could be talking about. Unfortunately, our time has run out, and it's been great talking to you, David. This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the publishing industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I've been talking to David Rothman, whose website is telluride.org, a site I recommend, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you very much.
Thanks, David. Enjoyed it.
Take care, David.